Sometimes we simply must get away. And what better way to get away than to eat our way around the world?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way over there in Acadalia, Cyprus, who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Nikki James and producers Carol Stafford and Parmley Taff. Folks, sometimes we simply must get away. And what better way to get away than to eat our way around the world? So pour yourself a fresh cup of coffee, pull up an easy chair, and fasten your seatbelt, because today, What's Eating What Radio is going to take you around the world in 80 dinners. Here to guide the way, we have Bill and Cheryl Jameson, authors of Around the World in 80 Dinners. Boy, let's start with ladies first. Cheryl, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hi, thank you. It's a pleasure to be aboard.
Yeah, and Bill, welcome aboard.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Now we'll know which is which, right? We can have a sense of voices here.
That's so, right. Although my voice is about as low as Bill's today, since I'm suffering a little bit of a cold from some not quite around the world flight, but we'll make it through it.
That's one of the things I want to talk about. Of course, it's as you travel around the world, how many colds did you catch? But we'll delay that one for a while. You're the authors of 20 different cookbooks.
Well, there are about 13, 14 cookbooks, something like that, mm-hmm. and then a number of travel guides mm-hmm. that we wrote back in the 1980s and 90s.
Okay, so you have a tradition then of food and travel, combining
yes.
the two. And you said about traveling around the world and to write about it, and on frequent flyer miles, no less?
Right. That paid almost half of our expenses for the journey.
Uh-huh.
In terms of the total cost, so it was a great way to do it for us. We couldn't have afforded nearly as much of a spree as we enjoyed without having the frequent flyer miles.
We might have only gotten halfway around the world or only been able to have 40 dinners,
uh-huh.
I guess.
Well,
no, it turned out to be a really good benefit, and it was something that Bill researched in incredible detail, and I have to really credit him for the time that he spent on figuring out how to put those miles to use.
Well, good. Well, to get to know each of you, what I would like to do is start with your favorite meal in this around the world journey. I'd like to ask each one of you for your favorite meal, your favorite location, and why it was your favorite. So, Cheryl, again, ladies first.
Okay. Well, if I just have to pick one, and you're really putting me on the spot here by making me pick a single choice, I would have to say that it was the banquet dinner that we were able to experience in the city of Shaozhou, China.
Mm-hmm.
As readers will discover, we ended up in Shaozhou to visit some friends. We'd never been there before.
And where is Shaozhou?
Shaozhou is about halfway between Hong Kong and Shanghai, near the coast, but actually inland on the Han River, which is a major Chinese
mm-hmm.
river. It's an area known for ceramics and pottery, the kaolin clay and such that have been known for making fine Chinese ceramics for centuries. Anyway, our friends have a ceramic factory there, which is why they're in that particular place. But other than them, there are very few Westerners that ever visit that area, let alone live there. And even though this is a city of 3 million people, it tends to be a little provincial by Chinese standards, where all
but a lot of people
so large.
But a lot of people can still be provincial in China, right?
Right.
Anyway, we ended up, because we were kind of novelties visiting this city, since most visitors go off to Shanghai or Beijing and other areas, we were asked if we would mind being filmed for the local television station, and there's just one there, and we said, well, sure, that would be fun and fine, and they took us around to a number of places with incredibly good street food, which is a whole nother story.
Mm-hmm.
But what it comes up with the reason that I mentioned all this background for my favorite dinner is that after we had done that filming, we were asked if we would mind coming on another segment of a show that translates in English as the name Eating is Everything. And that show is on three nights a week following the evening news, and has a host chef who's sort of the emerald of Shaozhou. And we were to go on his show the next day and just make a single dish, and then he would make one. And this all sounded fun and interesting and an incredible cultural adventure.
Mm-hmm.
But when we arrived the next morning to do this, he had changed the game plan. The chef had said, wait a minute, these people have come from halfway around the world, and we are going to prepare them a proper welcome Chinese banquet. And so by accident and, by surprise, we ended up in a situation where we got to watch Chef Fang and about 40, and I'm not exaggerating, 40 sous chefs prepare over a course of 4 hours one morning a dinner of some two dozen and more dishes, specially for us, that was served to us with our friends, and that the chefs themselves, the two of them joined the TV show chef and the other executive chef involved with this, both sat down to enjoy the meal with us. And the combination of the incredible flavors in this meal,
right,
that featured loads of fresh seafood, a very wonderful clean flavors, and I can tell you more about that too, but that coupled with the fact that there was this total element of surprise and shock that we were the honored guests at something like this, and that we got to share it with good friends who were there in the city, and that's why we had come in the first place,
mm-hmm,
makes that my top most memorable meal of many, many.
That would be a good one. I had the opportunity to get in one of those huge banquet meals in Hong Kong, and I remember it too very, very clearly, because I happened to get a piece of bad fish that went to some very dire. But I still remember the rest of the meal as being incredibly good. Bill, let's go to you. Your favorite meal on the round the world adventure.
Well, there were many, many extraordinary meals.
You know how I come to the rationalization of having a favorite experience, because when you have so many favorite experiences, I think the only way you can rationalize it is that it just at this very moment, this is my favorite.
Right.
You know, next moment, it's going to be another one.
And I will say the Khao Soi lunch that we had in northern Thailand.
Ah.
Oh, that's so good.
Yes, it was. We were touring around the area near Chiang Mai, and
that would be in the northern highlands of Thailand,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And we,
I think it's for me.
we stopped at a well, it was a hole in the wall joint would be a kind description. But our
serendipity,
guide,
huh?
Our guide, who was a local, knew what he was doing, and he said that this is the best place for Khao Soi in all of Thailand, and it was. I was just fabulous, and it is the most characteristic dish of that area of Thailand. So,
mm-hmm. What is it again?
Khao Soi. It's spelled many different ways in English, but of course, they don't use the Roman alphabet. But One common way of spelling it is K-H-A-O, second word, S-O-I.
And it is an incredible combination of noodles, coconut milk, coconut oil, beef that's been marinated in a mixture of curry spices and fish sauce and palm sugar, put all together with more chili, lime wedges, fried shallots, oh, pickled vegetables. It is the most amazing tour de force dish.
Okay.
And we have a version of it in the book for anybody that's interested in trying to replicate it themselves.
Okay, folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're taking you and me around the world in 80 dinners with Bill and Cheryl Jamieson, authors of Around the World in 80 Dinners. When we come back, I'd like to ask the both of you a question that I've been kind of scratching my head about, and that's the impact of set and setting in meals and the importance thereof. And, of course, when you're traveling around the world, both really do come into play as opposed to, you know, a meal that you experience in the everyday. And so when we come back, we'll play a little bit about set and setting, which, of course, is a notion brought to us by none other than Dr. Timothy Leary. So do stay tuned. We will be right back. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson. No telephone calls today, but if you'd like to talk about your favorite meal in the world, go to the forum at metrofarm.com. We will be right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Welcome back, folks. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson. We're traveling around the world with the Jamiesons, Bill and Cheryl Jamieson, authors of Around the World in 80 Dinners, authors of many cookbooks and many travel books. And, you know, I always think that a good cookbook should be a travel book. Am I wrong? I mean,
that's a good statement.
It should be a travel book. You know, when you get a book on Creole cooking, you know, you should be able to look between the recipes and see and get a great insight into the culture of that food, where that food came from.
A good cookbook really must have a sense of place about it.
Mm-hmm.
You should feel transported, whether that's to another state or another part of the world.
Or another time, even.
Uh-huh.
Right.
You know, one of my great fears in life is that we're all growing into this big mishmash of sameness, you know, and
mm-hmm.
when you travel around, you see that here in the United States. You travel around and you go from city to city, and it's all the same stuff, you know, and it's
right.
just disappointing. A year or so ago, I was in San Antonio, Texas, and I was had my father and his bride in tow, and we were kind of traveling around, and I was just greatly disappointed to be in the South, in San Antonio, and seeing the same darn franchise food places I could find at home, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And then we were down in downtown San Antonio, and we were walking along, and I happened to hear a little faint music, and I kind of followed my ears, and we ended up at this little park. And here in the park, they were having a gospel music festival, and all the way around the edges of the park was a barbecue. I found heaven. You know, it was like just accidentally running into heaven, and there it was, and my life was complete again. You know, I knew that there was something left in the world.
That's true. It is disturbing, the sameness that's starting to appear every place.
Do you see that everywhere? Even like in the northern regions of Thailand, do you see that same sameness creeping in everywhere?
Unfortunately, you do. Particularly in Chiang Mai itself, it's beginning to look and feel more and more like Bangkok, which often looks and feels like Hong Kong, which you know, is much like New York in a lot of ways. So.
But the thing that's still gratifying is that if you search, there are still amazing pockets of authentic food and of tradition still being maintained, and of amazing flavors, and just all over the world too. So that's the good news part.
Then it hasn't totally taken over. Then there's still things to see and experience out there. Let me take you quickly to the psychedelic experience and Dr. Timothy Leary, who said that your experience in going through these experiences are governed by two principles. One is set. And that's the mental state that you take into something. And the other is setting, which is the physical location that you experience that experience in. And I often thought that those are the two things that really make up your experiences in dining when you travel around the world, for example. I mean, when you go to the local franchise restaurant for a meal, you know, in the workaday world, you really don't have a setting. You know, your physical location is kind of meaningless because it's everywhere. So you only deal with your frame of mind when you go into it. But when you travel around the world, you have these two things that are really working together. And especially when you're traveling and you're going into a new place, your set or your mental state is wide open. Your all of your receptors are wide open and seeing and experiencing, and the setting, the physical location is so different and exotic, and those are the things that really make up a meal. And a little example: a couple of years ago, I was in down in the South Pacific on the island of Efate in the Vanuatu group, and we're going to have dinner with the Secretary of the Interior of Vanuatu. And, of course, when you make an appointment with a government official in Vanuatu, they may or may not show up. You never really know for sure. There's no guarantees in the South Pacific as to time. So we went to this extraordinary French restaurant that was put together by some French expats who were living in Vanuatu, and the setting was absolutely incredible. It was out on a wharf on a river, and right on the other side of the river was this massive jungle. I mean, it was just as primitive as you can possibly imagine on the other side of this little river. And yet on our side, it was this elegant French restaurant underneath the palm thatches on a pier out in the river. And as we were waiting for the government people to show up, which of course they never did that night, we were sipping this fine French wine and just enjoying the incredible setting. And on this river, light started to fade, and the jungle noises came up, and they turned on the lights, and the lights started shining on the river, and all the insects were attracted to the light, and all the fish were attracted to the insects, and there was this great feeding frenzy right underneath us on the river, you know. But as this progressed, a new critter showed up, and by then we were getting a little tipsy from the fine French wine, and this nuke bug showed up, and I happened to notice these big, huge moths. And they would hit the water, and no fish would eat them. And I got to wondering why no fish would eat those moths. And sooner or later, our food came, and we were eating. And by then, we were pretty tipsy. And these moths started congregating, and they eventually started flying into us. And they were like armor-plated moths that you could probably shoot with a machine gun and you wouldn't knock them down. But one of them landed in my wife's dinner plate, and she was having this beautiful dinner of some kind of French meal and had his sauces and everything, and it started flapping, and the food was flying everywhere, and she threw it on the floor and stepped on it, and it went crunch, and everybody around kind of looked at her, but by then we were falling on our backs laughing. It was the most hilarious thing we'd ever had. But the set and the setting, you know, the mental attitude that you take into a situation when you're traveling, and the setting, the extraordinary places that you have been, do they really make up that experience that you can get no other place?
I think Yes.
Yes.
We're both rushing to answer in this case, yes. And, you know, sometimes you hear people make a distinction between tourists and travelers. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, usually what is expressed is that a tourist goes places, but more to just, you know, have a notch in their belt. And travelers go with an open mind and are very, you know, much wanting to have a local type experience. They're not wanting to eat at a franchise place because, well, I know that's going to be something that I know what the taste will be. Travelers are really open to, you know, in their, as you say, the set, to settings that will make memories for the rest of their lives.
Right.
And that's what we were fortunate enough to experience.
Bill?
Oh, yes. So many different settings that we ate in on the trip. I'm going to 10 different countries and, 25 different distinct destinations within those countries.
Mm-hmm.
An extraordinary wealth of different kinds of places, from the old Portuguese colonial capital of Salvador in Brazil to the village of Franschhoek in the South African winelands area.
Mm-hmm.
Just 5,000 people, but a number of fabulous restaurants.
You ate in Singapore too, didn't you?
Oh yes, and we loved the food in Singapore.
Oh boy, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want you to take us to Singapore and then to Australia and then to Bali and then all over the world, because folks, this is the Food Chain, What's Eating What Radio. And today we're eating up the world, literally, or figuratively at least, with Bill and Cheryl Jameson, authors of Around the World in 80 Dinners. Just fun, pure fun, that's what we're having today. And sometimes it's important to get away. And today that's exactly what we're doing. We're just getting away and eating our way around the world as it is. And we've talked about some great places they have been, and we're going to talk about Singapore and Australia when we come back. So do stay tuned. Welcome back, folks. This is The Food Chain. Today we're talking about eating our way around the world. We are eating away around the world with Bill and Cheryl Jameson, authors of Around the World in 80 Dinners. And right now we're headed for Singapore. And as a young kid just out of Montana, I found myself in Singapore once a long time ago, and I had a bunch of time off from my duties as a sailor in the United States Navy, and so I made friends with a restaurant owner, a Chinese guy who owned a Russian restaurant, and thus I learned the true nature of Singapore as a crossroads of the world where things get all mixed up. And here we had a Chinese gentleman who owned a Russian restaurant, but what I learned is that he made the best banana fritters I've ever had in my life. And so I would show up there at in the morning and have banana fritters and a beer for breakfast, and then I took him for a ride. I took him out to the airport, and I rented a Cessna airplane, and I took him up for a ride in an airplane. And when we came back, you know, he took me all the way up and down the street to introduce me to all of his fellow shopkeepers, because nobody was going to believe that he had been up in an airplane.
Yeah.
But after that, the world became my oyster in Singapore. Do you find those kind of relationships are much easier to come by as a traveler than in the day-to-day world, Bill?
Oh, I think so. We in Singapore alone, we had several really interesting experiences of. We were eating a lot in what they call hawker centers, which are the most comparable thing you can think of in the United States is an enormous food court.
Right. Okay.
With vendors specializing in one or two dishes from their ancestors' home area, wherever that might be, and serving them in this massive food court area. and you share tables with people. And we got into several conversations with local people talking about their food and their lives, and they were very very welcoming and very generous in talking about things with us.
Sometimes they went even and bought extra dumplings for us or something that they really thought we should try another version of.
Mm-hmm.
It was just remarkable in their enthusiasm about their foods. And, again, these are in very humble settings because it's almost like a food court in a mall, but without the mall. It's just a food court. And these are casual settings, but with incredible food that each vendor has maybe one or two specialties, whether they make chicken rice or an oyster omelet or a cake out of radishes that might have soy or might have chili and, maybe another one that'll have sugar cane juice and another that just has the banana fritters you just mentioned chili crab. It's just an incredible wealth of dishes, and everybody has their opinion on which one is, which booth has the best version and also how you should eat it with the various chili sauces and soys and other condiments.
How do you protect yourself from getting sick? Like I said earlier when discussing a banquet in Hong Kong, we were going, and those Hong Kong banquets those Chinese banquets are so extraordinary because they must have 300 courses of food that they keep bringing you, food after food after food. But I remember the second that I swallowed that fish that I was toast, and boy, was I ever toast.
Mm.
How do you protect yourself when you're traveling around the world so that you don't become toast like I did?
In the case of Singapore, it's very easy because the sanitation codes of the city are extremely strict. And all of these food stands in the hawker centers, and there are like 150 hawker centers in Singapore, but they are regulated by the food authorities very carefully to ensure sanitary conditions.
What about when you're in the highlands of Bali or something like that?
It's chancier there.
And you just have to be observant in those cases.
Uh-huh. But what do you watch?
You want to make sure that you can see what's going on preparation-wise.
Yeah, but what do you watch for?
To be able to see that things that should be hot are kept hot, that things that should be cold
are
kept cold.
So you're looking for heat, right?
Yes, or chilling, whichever is the way that the food should be prepared. But yes, and a lot of times, with street food, at least you can see what's going on. You can tell if the meat that's going into this wonderful satay with the incredible sauces and all of that is actually being, kept first over ice and then going, over a hot fire, and whether, the water is, from a sealed bottle to start with.
I was wondering with respect to ice, having dined extensively in Cairo,
you don't want the food touching the ice.
Right.
Yeah. You don't want anything close to the water.
Right.
Right.
And you don't want to eat anything that isn't just been cooked.
Right.
Yes. And that advantage with the street food is often it is just cooked.
Mm-hmm.
And, you go for the things that are peeled or, if there aren't bottles of water, you drink soda and things like that. But
you
common sense, but also be a little bold in your thinking, too.
Yeah, so you traveled all the way around the world. Did you experience any of the intestinal problems?
No.
So you,
not a bit.
Not at all.
Good.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, well, that clues me into the fact that you know what you're doing. that you're watching and you're paying attention. And,
I think also, too, our stomachs and digestive systems are used to a lot of different kinds of foods. We eat a very, quite a varied diet routinely here in the United States. We eat a lot of chili and other flavors and seasonings just routinely. Mm-hmm. And I think that helps much more so than if we were people who only ate, boiled chicken and mashed potatoes all the time.
I often wondered about that because, after that experience of getting very sick in Hong Kong,
mm-hmm.
I've been able, seemingly, to travel around the world and eat all kinds of weird things in all kinds of weird places and have never gotten sick after that. Often wondered if I didn't catch some kind of immunity from that. But take us to Australia, will you? What a wonderful country, but so different in the character of its people.
Oh, it's a joy to see the cultures that have mingled there in the last 30 or so years. Now, at one time, Australia was, you know, just a kind of mini Great Britain.
Right.
It was settled strictly by English settlers and
prisoners.
Yes, right.
I often remark, if you want to know the difference between Australia and New Zealand, well, you just have to consider who settled each. You know, Australia was settled by prisoners, and New Zealand was settled by farmers. And boy, can you ever tell the difference in the cultures of those two countries? They're so close together and seemingly so similar. But I'm going to have to take a quick break. But when we come back, I want you to tell us about the perfect breakfast sandwich and your experiences in the Australian wine district. Were you around the Hunter Valley? Is that where you were?
We were around McLaren Vale in the Barossa Valley.
Okay, good. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson. We're having a little fun today. We've taken a break and jumped on our frequent flyer miles, and we're traveling around the world with Bill and Cheryl Jameson, authors of Around the World in 80 Dinners, and we're eating away around the world, so stay tuned. We will be right back. Well, good on you for tuning in. The Food Chain, it's What's Eating What Radio, and today we are traveling around the world with Bill and Cheryl Jameson, authors of Around the World in 80 Dinners, and right now we're heading off into the wine country of Australia to have a bite and meet some interesting people. And did you run over any kangaroos?
No, but I sure enjoyed seeing them.
Uh-huh.
I was really fond of the kangaroos and the koalas and all those wonderful animals.
And isn't it amazing how everybody down there has these giant roo bumpers?
Yes.
When I saw that, I thought, I bet I know what those are for.
That's right, yes. I even went to Kangaroo Island. Bill couldn't do it because that's when he caught a bad cold and his ears were too stuffed to fly.
But yeah.
I went over there and found amazing kangaroos, but also some really good cheese and wine, too.
Good. Well, tell us about the perfect breakfast sandwich that you found in Australia.
Well, we went to the Barossa Valley Farmers Market, which is held every Saturday all year long. And we were talking to farmers who brought their produce there. And one of them suggested that that we should try the breakfast sandwich that was sold as a charity fundraiser for the farmers market, also coffee and hot chocolate,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing. And it was just a fabulous sandwich, partially because all the ingredients were so fresh. The eggs were, you know, just laid that morning, probably, and it was great bacon.
Oh, they know how to make breakfast over there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they do. You know, farmers markets are something that are making a great comeback here in the United States, and I've seen some great ones around the world, most particularly one that is sitting in my mind right now is one down in Valparaiso, Chile, that was just so extensive and so absolutely beautiful just to sit there and look at it with all of the colors of the food and the colorful people. Do you see a lot of farmers markets when you're traveling? Do you make that a point of your wanderings and meanderings is to check in on the local foods?
Yes, markets of every kind. Again, it's such a great way to have a view into the culture and the colors and the aromas and just the flavor you get of an area, whether, you know, you're looking at seafood or vegetables or meats or, I mean, any of these things give you such an insight. And usually they're accompanied by amazing flowers and just a riot of other things, too. It's a real joy for us.
Well, they're always so much more interesting to me than tourist sites.
Right.
You know, you go to a tourist site and you see all these guys in, you know, plaid Bermuda shorts and...
and here's another waterfall, whatever.
You know, but you go to the local farmer's market, and it's life, it's people, it's food, and it's interaction. Even on Maui, you know, the island of Maui, that's completely overrun by us tourists, you know, you can... sneak over to the farmer's market, and that's where you find the people.
And we love Hawaiian farmer's market.
Yeah, actually, one of the very best and most unusual farmer's markets in the United States is in Hilo on the Big Island.
Mm-hmm.
It's an...
Well, that's a disappointment, because I was just there about a month ago, and I missed it.
Darn.
Just on Saturdays.
Just on Saturdays. Well, that explains that.
You know, a combination of local produce and Portuguese influence, as well as Asian influences of all kinds, is just remarkable. And that's the kind of thing we find, you know, in Singapore and some of these other destinations we were traveling to, where they are crossroads of cultures, and so you do get this amazing view into, you know, all areas of Asia and the Middle East and all kinds of things that have come to a certain area. We haven't even mentioned South India, and that's another of those kinds of areas.
Before we do, tell me about the place that you found yourself in that you thought, uh-oh, we don't want to be here. I mean, that's part of traveling too, right? Is you know, the good ship Serendipity takes you into some waters that you'd rather not be sailing.
Well, the one that that stands out in my mind, at least, was when we were on a safari in South Africa, and we were watching a lion family, and the female lion who was protective of her cubs was getting a little upset with our presence. And so we began pulling away, and as we did, just driving across a grassy field, the Land Rover went into a big hole that was hidden by the grass, and it was a man trap. Right. We could not get out of the driver could not, you know, used all of his four-wheel drive gears to get us out, couldn't do it, and the lioness was just staring us down the whole time.
Well, did she eat you?
We thought we were dinner.
Uh-huh. And what happened?
Well,
our ranger
called another ranger who came and towed us out.
Good.
But it was a terrifying 15 minutes.
But aren't those experiences the experiences that really make life interesting? I mean,
we'll be talking about that for the rest of our life.
Yes, exactly. Those are the experiences that you carry with you and you tell. It's not
that will become a family legend.
Exactly.
Probably our great grandchildren will be talking about the time that their great great grandparents almost got eaten by a lion in Africa, and the story will be much grander by the time.
Yeah, that's always much more. That's always much more interesting than the nice hotel you stayed at in Adelaide or something like that. You know, it's that time that you almost got et. That's what you carry with you. Folks, quick break, right back. Do stay tuned. Well, Around the World in 80 Dinners. That's the title of a book by Bill and Cheryl Jameson, and that's the subject of our conversation today as we travel around the world. Cheryl, I asked Bill about that place that would have been better not to find yourself in. But what about you? What sticks in your mind as the place that scared the heck out of you?
I wouldn't say it was so scary, but we had an initial disappointment when we arrived in New Caledonia. We think we're going off to the, you know, exotic South Pacific. You were talking about Vanuatu earlier, and New Caledonia is kind of out there, as close to Vanuatu as anywhere, which is not close to any place.
Yeah, it's for those people who don't know, Vanuatu is an archipelago of islands about 500 miles east of New Guinea and about 800 miles north of northern Australia.
Uh-huh.
So, and New Caledonia, I think about 500 miles southeast of Vanuatu.
Yes,
so we're talking,
that's about right.
Yeah, we're talking out
that's
there
no
in the
place.
South Pacific, yeah.
Yeah, well, we arrived there, and we were greeted first by a situation that the hotel we had booked, which Bill had researched very carefully for its location on the beach and all that, was closed for renovations.
Oh,
and that they,
how
yeah,
often
they had
that
gifts.
Happens.
Yeah, and that they, not to worry, they had taken care of getting us another place, and they told us the name of it, and Bill remembered looking at it online and thinking it was the ugliest thing he ever saw. And at this point, I had gotten, it's the last cold I had. I had a horrible cold and bronchitis, so I was not feeling good at all, and I just wanted to get to the hotel. And here we didn't, you know, we weren't going where we thought we were. We're going to a place that we think is pretty ugly.
And you speak French?
Well, we understand enough French to
okay.
know what's going on. We do not speak other languages beyond English well, but we can stumble along in terms of vocabulary. Anyway, that was not an auspicious beginning, but as it turned out, that particular hotel did have another wing that Bill had not seen on the online, and they booked us because we had been bumped into a very elegant room that was large with a huge terrace overlooking the pool and the ocean, and there couldn't have been a
well,
better place for us to end up.
That would be like a narrow escape, right?
Yes.
That would be a good
yes.
story for a narrow escape. Oh. Well, one of the subjects that we should have got to, and I wanted to get to, but we didn't get to, is how do you prepare for something like this? You know, when we travel, my wife has become very adept at using the internet and the telephone, and boy, she just takes great care of us. Bill, you did all the work here, right?
Right.
Got any secrets?
Well, we did have a lot of time to do it because we made a decision to do the trip about 4 years before we actually departed.
So tip number one, take 4 years to plan.
Take the time to do the planning right.
Right, yes. Take the time to do a lot of reading and looking at sources on the internet and that kind of thing.
And look at a lot of them so that you know you're getting a rounded view.
Right.
Well, this has been a lot of fun. I can't think of anything more fun than traveling and experiencing the world through its different foods, because when you do that, you also meet the people who are involved in preparing that food and growing that food, and that's really what life is all about. And when we, as you say, become tourists and we stay in these fancy hotels and we eat in the hotel restaurants, and it's just like, well, never mind. But you just miss out on so much. So,
you sure do.
So thank
why
you.
Bother to travel?
Thank you, Bill and Cheryl Jamison, authors of Around the World in 80 Dinners. How can we get in touch with you really quickly?
You can go to our website, which is cookingwiththejamisons.com.
Perfect. Thank
and
you so
Jamison
much.
Jamison is spelled with an I.
Thank you so much for joining us today. What wonderful guests.
Bye-bye.
Thank
you, Michael. Bye.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.